Welcome to the Ark of Millions of Years, New Discoveries and Light on the Creation by E.J. Clarke and B. Alexander Agnew. My name is Brooks Agnew, co-author of the book, and I'm going to read the foreword to you and the chapter called The Dimensions. The foreword. It all began when my daughter, Eve, and wouldn't you know she had to be named Eve, a university student, called home one evening to vent her frustration over a comment made by one of her professors. He said, "You don't believe that old story of Noah's Ark, do you?" Of course, that statement got the attention of everyone in his class. He continued, "Why, that ark would have to be the size of the state of California to hold all the animals." My daughter then wanted to know about how the ark managed to hold all the animals. I told her that I didn't know the answer at present, but I would seek the answer. For 16 years thereafter, I was diligent in my search for the evasive answer to her question. Then, about 1.5 years ago, the answer slowly came, in bits and pieces, over a 2-month period of time, by inspiration. The inspired revelation nearly knocked my socks off, and, to coin an old adage, was way beyond my wildest imagination. I reasoned if such an event truly occurred, then there must be some documentation somewhere preserving an account of this incredible story. After searching through many ancient writings and scriptures, to my amazement, the story was preserved as I had received it, in bits and pieces, a little bit here and a little bit there. When compiled, the bits and pieces fell together like a jigsaw puzzle, telling a new story of the creation of the earth, the fall of Adam and Eve, Noah and his ark, the flood, and the destiny of this world. The story that has emerged will forever change your perspective on the creation, no matter what your religious persuasion might be. What I didn't realize in the beginning was that I had accidentally stumbled onto ancient knowledge that had been lost for 6,000 years. The book restores the lost ancient knowledge that is symbolized by the Star of David or Seal of Solomon pictured on the front cover. Knowledge that answers so many questions that heretofore have been major stumbling blocks. Stumbling blocks that have pitted science against religion and creationists against evolutionists. My daughter has since asked, "How do you know that this is true? Could one writing have influenced another?" I replied, "Well, yes, it could have, but it is all that we have to work from." Furthermore, since the story came first by inspiration and lastly by documentation, I feel that it is true. I want to emphasize that I do not claim to be a prophet, seer, or revelator, but rather a seeker of knowledge. Knowledge can be available to all that earnestly seek it. Do not the scriptures and the Holy Bible teach this principle in the following verses? Quote, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall ask the Father in my name, he will give you. Ask, and ye shall receive." Close quote. Desiring that all should know this compelling story, I found a co-author to help me write this tremendous work. I call it a tremendous work because in order to tell the story, we had to write about the entire creation, no small feat. The answer to my daughter's question is given somewhere in this book. Sorry, there are no giveaways here. You must read the book in order to find the answer. The book is non-denominational. It is not about religion, but about the creation. However, it is difficult to separate the two because the story was prepared in ancient and modern sacred scriptures and writings. We do not aspire to teach religious doctrine of any kind, but only to present what we found through documented sources. The documentation tells the story. We merely guide it. A word of caution: read each chapter in sequence. Don't skip around and risk becoming lost and confused. Although the story is profound and deep, it is written in simple terms, so that all may understand what is conveyed. Whenever possible, we have used the exact text as it is worded. E.J. Clark. I have a curiosity. Not an ordinary curiosity, no, not by any means. At 13, I stated that everything we do will eventually affect the universe. One day I was reading about Aristotle creating the terms and definitions for government. At least aristocracy, democracy, anarchy, and monarchy were described by him and are used today as textbook definitions of government. But the most remarkable thing about the story was how he did it. All knowledge is innate, he wrote. He felt that if a man just sat and thought things through hard enough, he could derive all knowledge from whole cloth. The difference between people that were awake and those who were asleep became profound. To act and to be acted upon were a stupor of thought to the masses. Einstein is often quoted as saying that imagination is more important than intelligence. Well, I was well endowed with imagination, and have since my youth refined my ability to bring those images into reality, either through teaching, writing, or actually building the darn things with my own hands. Wondering how things are made, or can be made, is to me the most exciting exercise in the human experience. Feeling authorized by some of the greatest thinkers of all recorded history to think about things and formulate theories, I endeavored to go beyond the furthest point of man's exploration. It has been my great fortune to be born at the dawn of the modern information age. The ability to find and consume knowledge is unfettered. The knowledge imparted to students by even the most efficient and accomplished professor, assuming they are in class and paying attention, is a 10-point dot on a football field compared to the information one can assimilate with time and the hunger to make it known. Now you know my source of energy. When I met E.J. Clark, I was presented with a most marvelous challenge. Assist in the compilation and analysis of the creation of the Earth, utilizing the most modern physics and ancient observations available. At first glance, it was a strange dichotomy. But after a few late-night forays into dozens of amazing transitory relationships, the truth opened up to both of us. The ancient texts were without any doubt astounding in their fascinating ability to cross-check and testify of cosmic and terrestrial events. I doubt there are six people on the planet who have at their disposal a better working knowledge of these events than E.J. Clark. Further, without the physics in one hand, one could never understand the observations of the prophets and other ancient writers. Without the ancient texts, the modern scientist is unable to correlate the creation without gaping holes in logic. Putting the two collections together, we created this landmark literary work. For the first time, in over 6,000 years, the creation of the Earth has been explained from two simultaneous viewpoints, like binoculars, whose visionary sum will inspire common man and bring him very close to understanding one of the great mysteries of heaven. Who made the Earth and placed it here may or may not be important to you. How it was made and how it was transported here is monumentally important. How it has been transformed and will yet be transfigured is enough knowledge to keep the pure scientist and the pure theologian intellectually and spiritually aroused for the rest of mortality and beyond. Sit back and be prepared to have all sciences and religions poured into your head. Relish your satisfaction as volumes of pure truth assume their proper position in the libraries of your mind. Then marvel at the great observatory of your imagination opens to the stars and reveals where you came from and why you are here. One of the real goals of this book is to convince you that you are an eternal being having a mortal experience, and that your potential is absolutely unlimited. Where you go from here is completely up to you. To quote a famous intergalactic traveler's favorite launching slogan, "To infinity and beyond." Buzz Lightyear. Chapter 2, The Dimensions. It is important for the reader to understand that not only is there clear evidence in ancient records of the existence of multiple heavens, what may be described in more scientific terms as dimensions, and that there is evidence of travels between these heavens, whether it be a beam of light, a sound, a particle, or a planet, there is mounting evidence that these dimensions exist. Though it may seem blasphemous to some, research into the trans-dimensional universe has uncovered some remarkable things. Theories describing the relationship between matter and energy are beyond most folks, but we will attempt to put some of the ideas and information in a form the reader can understand. Einstein and his associates uncovered a portion of the energy stored in the nucleus of a single proton. His equations inspired scientists and mathematicians to blend theories of time travel with the revelation of multiple dimensions. Black holes spinning so fast that they do not collapse, but rather possess a calm center through which one might view or even pass into another universe. The proof that our universe is indeed expanding and rotating at the same time, coupled with abundant negative energy, also provides a sound denominator for equations charting a path across the universe in a single step. He also put into universal language the basic relationship between matter and energy. He described a space-time continuum in which time and distance are not linear at all. In the early 19th century, a simple farm boy named Joseph Smith Jr. in upstate New York revealed the same things in revelations he recorded. The irrefutable fact is that matter and energy, or light, or spirit, as some may say, are interchangeable. Although man seems to understand this relationship, no one has revealed the process. Changing from energy into light and into matter is not a repeatable experiment. Even changing from matter into energy has only been done to a partial degree. We can burn wood, produce electricity with chemicals, and even split atoms apart. But we cannot get the little neutrons and protons to convert into 100% pure energy. Man has been thoroughly astonished by the energy contained in a few pounds of atoms. The space-time continuum, casually woven through science fiction, is real. Think of it as a bedsheet pulled tight at every edge. It is flat and free of wrinkles. That is, unless something distorts it. No matter how taut the fabric, placing a bowling ball in the center of the sheet will distort that plane. Any matter moving through space will cause a similar bend or a warp in the space-time continuum. The straight line that once was the thread of the sheet's fabric now curves around the bowling ball. The same thing happens with the continuum around the Earth, the Sun, and any other body of matter that moves through space. A gravitational wave is produced each time mass moves through space. Airplanes make a small and measurable distortion. Planets make a larger distortion, which can be detected with special observatories. LIGO is the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. There are several of them now working. They are the culmination of experiments designed and performed by scientists since the early 1900s. To detect gravitational waves, LIGOs, two L-shaped detectors, one in Livingston, Louisiana, the other in Hanford, Washington, work in concert across the nearly 2,000 miles that separate them. Gravitational radiation causes a strain on the fabric of space-time, transverse to the direction in which the waves are propagated. As they strike, say, the Earth, the waves will stretch the fabric in one direction, while along another they compress it. The distances between the test masses, fitted with fused silica mirrors and hung in enormous vacuum pipes encased in concrete in these laser observatories, will be measured with a laser beam split in two, each half then traveling the length of each arm multiple times. By then recombining or interfering the separate beams, any change in the distance between either of the pairs of masses will throw them out of phase with each other, thus indicating, if all goes well, the form of the gravitational wave as it reaches the Earth. If no waves pass, the distances between the test masses will be the same. To make sure, the two detectors are located far, far apart. That way, no local interference, earthquakes, noise, or fluctuations in the lasers can be mistaken for a gravitational wave. This means that in reality there is a shorter path between two points than the straight line of the thread. There is a hypotenuse that may significantly reduce that distance, but in order to utilize that shorter path, one must leave the bedsheet universe and access a different dimension. Travel across that gap would likely not be detectable in the known universe. That does not mean it is not there. Even in the Holy Bible, there are clear references to transdimensional travel by mortal beings and by vessels. Quote, "And when they were come up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord caught away Philip, that the eunuch saw him no more, and he went on his way rejoicing. But Philip was found at Azotus, and passing through, he preached in all the cities till he came to Caesarea. And Peter saw heaven opened, and a vessel descended unto him, as it had been a great sheet knit at the four corners, and let down to the earth. And this was done thrice, and the vessel was received up again into heaven." Close quote. Many modern physicists are faced with the works of Helmholtz, Lord Kelvin, Faraday, Maxwell, and other giants whose constraints and theories formed the foundations of the science. They laid the groundwork over 100 years ago for a highly controversial discovery that three-dimensional physics is only a subset of hyperspatial dimensions. The evidence being gathered by latter-day instruments indicates these other dimensions not only control the physics of our planet, but the stars, and possibly even life itself. Direct observations made with instruments and human senses show that information transfer between dimensions is occurring. The community forming right now has formulated the idea that this transfer of information, and possibly even physical matter, is the foundation substrate for everything in this dimension, the one from which we are writing and you are reading. The mathematical parameters for this transfer, often called gating, were founded in the works of a few 19th century pioneers. These giants not only challenged the bounds of contemporary math, they wrote new math and developed new constraints that to this day have proven to be sound. German mathematician George Riemann, Scottish physicists Sir William Thomson and James Clerk Maxwell, and British mathematician Sir William Rowan Hamilton produced a radical explanation for the basic properties of solid matter. They developed the vortex atom. Most 19th century scientists believe one of many theories about matter from the Roman poet Lucretius. Hard bodies, endorsed by Newton as well, to other atom-like models with fixed shapes and electron orbits. Vortex atoms were envisioned as tiny whirlpools of moving matter in an ether, an incompressible fluid that made up space in the universe. In 1873, Maxwell successfully explained the math that proved the existence of still smaller particles, known as quaternions. These four complex numbers, it's easy to explain particles these small by mathematical properties than actual appearance, were readily adopted by Hamilton. These mathematical rules explain how light and energy move in the form of waves throughout the universe. In 1897, A.S. Hathaway stated that instead of three dimensions, there were in fact at least four in a groundbreaking paper. Quaternions as numbers of four-dimensional space, published in the Bulletin of the American Mathematical Society. Maxwell, a poet as well as a mathematician, was already sure that this three-dimensional physical universe was dependent upon higher dimensional realities. Quote, O wretched race of men to space confined, what honor can ye pay to him whose mind to that which lies beyond hath penetrated? The symbols he hath formed shall sound his praise and lead him on through unimagined ways to conquests new in worlds not yet created. First, ye determinants, in ordered row and massive column ranged before him go, to form a phalanx for his safe protection. Ye powers of the nth roots of one, around his head in ceaseless cycles run, as unembodied spirits of direction. And you, ye undevelopable scrolls, above the host wave your emblazoned rolls, ruled for the record of his bright inventions. Ye cubic surfaces, by threes and nines, draw round his camp your 27 lines, the seal of Solomon in three dimensions. Close quote. The 21st century evidence is mounting. The universe is not only expanding, but at a rate that accelerates with each passing moment. Distances between two points are measured now in AUs, astronomical units, are the distance between the Earth and the Sun, 93 million miles, instead of light years. Recent experiments have shown that matter can indeed move faster than the speed of light. In fact, particles have been repeatedly clocked at speeds above 300 times the speed of light. Contrary to accepted mathematical limits, E is equal to mc squared, mass did not become infinity. There is a place of intersection between the libraries and universities full of rigid thinkers and the pure and simple knowledge man seems to have had since the first stylus was laid to clay or gold. There are, indeed, many dimensions. Mathematicians and physicists are catching up to prophets. As they do, we will all be able to read and scribble out not only the proof, but we'll be able to insert our minds and perhaps our bodies into the process and really discover the universe. like fish in the sea. Man has innocently imagined his realm beneath the ionosphere as the whole of the universe. Right now, we can only look at lights, whose realities are millennia away and older than the Earth itself. Right now, if there were a planet belched from the maelstrom of the galaxy by a nova or a rupturing black hole at the speed of light, we would not be granted the time to even pray before its collision with our solar system. It would physically arrive shortly after its image reflected in the mirrors of our most powerful telescopes. The ocean's sentient occupants steal glimpses of the stars through a calm sea and may circumnavigate the globe, but never dream of moving beyond the rich liquid bounty through which they fly. The intersection between the air and the surface of the sea is the boundary of their universe. They are unaware of cities and farms and classrooms. Does this mean they don't exist? No. If a dolphin from SeaWorld was educated in all the ways of man, including space travel and hypersonic flight through the air, and then returned to the sea, where he could pass along this great knowledge to other dolphins, would he be labeled a heretic? Would he be followed as a prophet or honored as a great explorer? What would his knowledge of the hyperuniverse be worth to his dolphin brothers? Would he forever leap into the air and strain to see a plane or a satellite or the bright lights of the city? The vast majority of people wander through life asleep, unaware of the hyperuniverses above them. But there are a few of us who are awake and live in a constant state of amazement. To be able to jump between the threads of the bedsheet universe may allow us to see these universes, and thus the explanation of the past of our existence. If small particles can be accelerated to many times the speed of light or pass between dimensions like a universe made like a hall of mirrors, then it too must be possible for larger particles, such as planets, to do so as well. Every human who correctly arrived at the conclusion that there is a creator God also knows that our ignominious accomplishments do not give us the authority to disclaim this possibility. The water planet, described in the Genesis creation long ago, was divided. Its daughter was moved in its clean and liquid state through the firmament to a place where the sun rules the day and the moon rules the night by passing from one dimension to another. We know that black holes exist. We have recent and compelling evidence that Einstein's theories about black holes are fairly accurate. Through decades of contemplation and long suffering, detectors have been engineered to provide data to test these theories. Piece by piece, we have proven some things to be true, and we have discovered even more than we imagined. Black holes don't sit still in space. In fact, if one thinks about it, what does it mean to sit still in space? Relative to what? There is no absolutely motionless spot in space. The whole of the known universe, and most assuredly those we suspect exist beside the one we think we occupy, is one infinite Heisenberg uncertainty. The absolute position of anything cannot be predicted or detected without altering the very thing we are trying to detect. Black holes move through space. Black holes rotate, sending immense gravitational waves out into space. We know that mass moving through space warps space-time, and black holes have tremendous mass in a very compact area. The amount of warp in the bedsheet universe depends on what weight and diameter bowling ball we use. We also observe that when objects spin, a portion of their mass is forced away from the center of rotation. It's proportional to its mass and the speed of rotation. In other words, the faster and heavier an object is, the more force it will exert against the gravity at the center. The same thing occurs when a black hole spins. It is our contention that scarcely a black hole will be found that does not spin. The faster a black hole spins, angular momentum takes over and its sphere becomes squashed. And the further from the center that mass is thrown, and the larger the proportion of the object's mass is thrown toward the outside boundaries of the spinning plane, the flatter that appearance becomes. Take that to the logical conclusion, and you may observe a spinning black hole 400 times the diameter of our solar system, with 90% of its matter on the outer rim, and only 10% of its matter spread across the rest of the diameter of that plane. In the center of that plane, there may be as little as 1% of the total mass of that black hole strewn over 50 million miles of space. The distortion of space-time from such a black hole would couple countless universes together. The black hole's singularity, the point at which all movement stops, would be divided across the centrifugal body. As long as a traveler avoids reaching a singularity, it is not destroyed. The traveler passes from one event horizon, the threshold at which a traveler enters the black hole, to the next, and on through the black hole without damage. An experienced traveler could move forward or backward in time from universe to universe through such a portal. Roy Kerr presented this algebraic possibility in 1985, long before the Hubble telescope displayed the possibilities of Einstein's imagination. This is the foundation for the theory of transdimensional space travel. Imagine a free-floating planet moving through space on a course that will take it through the center of the black hole ring, perpendicular to the plane of its rotation. That planet may suffer minor loss of mass as the outer ring of the black hole exerts its gravity, far enough from the Roche limits, that's the distance at which the gravitational diameter of the larger overcomes the gravitational diameter of the smaller, resulting in internal forces shattering the smaller body, to spare the planet from any real structural damage. A path through the sparsely populated epicenter of the spinning black hole may facilitate travel far across the universe, while the traveling planet barely ages. In other words, the planet may warp across huge distances of space without any damage and seemingly in an instant of time from the point of view of the traveler. The geomagnetic forces of black holes are being observed by the most modern instruments available and are a marvel, to be sure. The point of observation to factually verify that a planet may warp across space and time has never been achieved, except through the imagination of fellow theoretical physicists. It would be nearly impossible to position oneself at the edge of the spinning black hole, much like looking across the bedsheet from the edge, while a planet approaches and passes through from one side to the other. Even at 1,000 miles per second, it may take months or even centuries for the journey to occur from the point of view of an outside observer. What we want you to think about is the possibility for a planet to be transported across great expanses of time and space with no more difficulty than an electron transports from one uncertain spot to another around an atom. Whether by divine direction or mere cosmic chance, depending on the camp at which you warm your hands, the possibility appears to exist. At least this physicist would love to one day in future eternities find out if this does in fact occur. The completed Earth will one day return to its origin. According to the prophets, it will receive its paradisaical glory. The spirit of the earth will be separated from the physical earth and return home. The union of the polarity will be complete. The heavens shall roll together as a scroll, and the earth shall pass away. Sound familiar? The mathematics it takes to describe these quantum changes on a larger scale than two protons is not what this book is about. The concert playing across our telescopes contains countless vibrations. Some we can see with our eyes, some we can hear with our ears. The ones that stray into our radio, X-ray, infrared, or gravitational telescopes are but a speck of sand in the Sahara compared to the truth of the universe. The authors want you to think about that. The intention is not to make the reader feel small, but to inspire the mind to stretch and comprehend that your potential is absolutely infinite, limited only by your ability to receive truth. There are beings that know how the universe was made. They may indeed be in the process of making it still. If you believe you are a descendant of those beings, then your mind is authorized to think well beyond the surface of the planet from which we pray. Think beyond the rocket-reached system, imagined upon each cloudless night for guidance and inspiration. Open your mind to imagine that billions of solar systems lay beyond even your most powerful gaze. Believe that you were meant to know about them. Perhaps civilizations long since vanished from this planet may have known far more than our most brilliant scientists could hope. When we find them, will we destroy their records in fear? Will we bury their cities and melt down their books like forbidden fairy tales? Will we ignore them unless canonized by some robed authority? Will we call them a cult, close our minds to the possibility that the Creator spoke to someone other than our earthly affiliate? What fish-like absurdity.